You're listening to Stateside. I'm Cynthia Canty. What could AI, artificial intelligence, really mean for us in the future? And when might intelligent machines be at a point where they really become a part of our lives? Those are some of the questions that Michigan State University researcher Aaron Hines explores, where he runs the Hines Lab. They research the evolution of natural and artificial intelligence. Turns out there are four distinct types of artificial intelligence. And Professor Hines is here with us now to break them down. Aaron Hines, welcome back to Stateside.
Oh, thanks for having me.
Good to have you back with us. Tell us, how does evolution help with improving artificial intelligence systems?
Yeah, so there are pretty much two things that can be said about this. There's what I do, and then there's what lots of other people do. Let me talk about first how other people use evolution. What they do is called genetic algorithms, and they try to use genetic algorithms to create a better fit or a better classifiers to deal with data. What I do is I don't use a genetic algorithm. I use what's called digital life or digital evolution to evolve little virtual creatures that live in environments that pretty much look a little bit like a computer game to solve problems. The big discrepancy there is that there's an industry application, and that's what classifiers and deep learning does. And then there's what I do, and I try to understand how intelligence actually evolved. And that's why evolve virtual creatures in the computer to find out how that works.
And as you say in theconversation.com, the piece that you wrote for them, we need to do more than teach machines to learn. We need to overcome the boundaries that define the four different types of artificial intelligence. Help walk us through these four different types, starting with the type one AI of reactive machines. What does that mean?
Yeah, we have done lots and lots of progress on exactly these type 1 machines. A chess computer would fall into exactly that category. You present it with some data, then this chess computer computes the best possible move and spits out the answer. The computer knows nothing more than the board and has no internal state. It will play exactly the same move every time you ask them to evaluate the board again and again and again. And these machines that are type 1 pretty much have no memory that goes beyond the exact task that they're asking for, and they're completely deterministically repeating what they do. And in order to understand this discrepancy, let's quickly look at type 2, because type 2, that's a very big step. These machines have internal states or representations about their environment that goes beyond what they are perceiving right now. They can remember things from the past, for example.
They have limited memory.
So, I mean, that's a little bit tricky because every computer has memory, but we have to define what memory means. You can have memory to do your computations. That's what the chess computer does. But you can also have memory to remember the past and then take the past into account to make current decisions. That is what having internal state or having memory about something in the past means. And if you have that, you decide differently.
How would this be applied? What kind of everyday use might we see this type 2 AI? Like in self-driving cars you mentioned in your piece?
Yeah, that's an example to explain that. I mean, these boundaries are not super strict, but we already have these type 2 machines, or at least some of them are type 2. A self-driving car evaluates pretty much at least a little bit about the past. It looks what other cars do, where they're coming from, where they're driving at, and then makes a decision. But a self-driving car will never remember, oh, this yellow car drove so badly, next time I have to have a further distance from it. That is something that would be a true type 2 machine. It has information about the past or about other entities in the environment, and will also change its behavior based on this. And in a self-driving car, you kind of don't want this. You want to have a machine that does exactly the same over and over again. And in order for self-driving cars to work, you need this second layer. You need information about the environment or the past or other objects around you, rather than just having sensorial inputs.
All right, let's move into this type 3 AI, theory of mind. What is that?
Yeah, these two first categories, type 1 and type 2, is something that Chris Adami, a friend of mine and colleague, presented at an A-Life meeting a while ago. A-Life meeting is artificial life meeting. We just worked on our paper about representations and how brains have representations about the environment, and these machines that have representations are type 2 machines. So he came up with this distinction between type 1 and type 2, and then we argued a little bit about this and said we can extend this because we can not only measure that you have information, but we can measure what the information that you have is about. And if it's just about things around you, then you would fall in the type 2 category. However, if you have information about internal states of others, then you have type 3 intelligence. And let me explain this a little bit. If I interact with somebody, then I take into account the state of this other person. Is that other person angry, frightened, curious, bored, any of those things? And I know that this person is bored or that this person is curious or this person is frightened. That means I have information about the internal states of this other person. And in psychology or philosophy, this is called theory of mind. I know that the other thing has a mind on its own. It's not just an entity that does nothing else than whatever it does before.
And then finally into type four AI, self-awareness. Wow.
that's a pretty big leap. And the important point there is to have this distinction between type three and type four is that yet again, we can measure what the information that you have is about. And I think we can very easily interact with machines that have type three intelligence. They see that we are in need and they respond to what we have in need without us telling them, oh, feed me or drive me here or something like that. They can interact with us much easier. The real question is if they are self-aware and if they are then therefore fall in this fourth category. And we basically said, oh, a type 4 machine is not only a machine that has information about something outside of it or about internal states of others, but it has information about its own internal states. And the argument or the example that I gave there is it's a very different thing to be hungry at noon or to know that I will be hungry at noon. Because if I know that I'll have internal states, I can actually much easier predict the future and also control the future, right? It's not just a surprise that this happens, but I can reflect on myself and I can project from whatever I experience to the future and then make much better decisions. And because these type four representations, these representations are about your own self, the moment you are at this topic of self-representations, you can just immediately call it consciousness. I'm not perfectly sure if this is true consciousness in that sense, because this is a very, very fishy term. But having representations about your own state is a very important step in that.
And I know you've been working on a test, Aaron, that determines whether a machine might fall into that type three category of AI. How does that test work?
Yeah. After we sort of laid out these four types of intelligence, of course, our question was, oh, can we do this? Can we demonstrate the difference between those two types? And our earlier paper showed very nicely the difference between type one and type two machines. We had a task where the object, the robot that we controlled, has to catch the small ones, avoid the large ones. And it cannot do that without observing this for a while and forming representations about the concept of small or large. We evolved agents that can now do this, and we measured this, and we know, okay, these machines now have representations, meaning information about the environment. And then we said, okay, can we extend this? Can we create a test or at least an environment we can evolve machines that have this type three intelligence, knowing something about what the other person, so to speak, knows?
Aaron, where's the borderline between the AI machines that we have now, the artificial intelligence available to us now, and what is yet to come?
Yeah, I think this is a big part of this article that I try to convey. The type one or type two machines that we have, let's just look at them. This is pretty much Siri can recognize your voice. It's an awesome tool to have, or self-driving cars, or then there's Google AlphaGo that beat the Grandmaster in playing Go. And these are very, very awesome technological achievements. But these are what I would call type one machines. They don't learn from their past experience. Mm. I'm not supposed to interact with them beyond the purpose that they are designed for. And I was asking myself, if we continue this line of research, will they get me to the robots or to the intelligence that I'm interested in? And I have to say, I'm sort of born in the 70s, and that's when Star Wars came around. And I was looking at C-3PO and R2-D2, and I was like, wow, I would like to have or build these machines that are artificially intelligent, and they are their own personality and their own entities in the environment. And the current AI research that we have, which is deep learning and large classifiers or machine learning, is getting us more and more towards the machines that we already have, Google AlphaGo, but it's not a path to these robots that I'm looking for. What's the difference? And the difference is that I'm not trying to construct something from scratch. I'm trying to evolve these artificial intelligences, because evolution is the process that already gave rise to our intelligence. So why not just recapitulate this and try to get them intelligence through that method?
It certainly seems like those of us who watch Westworld on HBO are thinking of that type 4 AI. Did that ring bells for you?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, I saw in that time the original Westworld. I haven't seen the new series yet. But you're absolutely right. As far as I understand this, these machines reflect about themselves, and they're definitely type 4 intelligence. And quite frankly, that has to result in some kind of conflict, because if you have a type 4 machine that is self-aware, you cannot just boss it around or give it commands, because, well, it's sort of sentient already. So, the moment we have type 4 intelligent machines We have to rethink the whole way how we use or how we apply them or how we negotiate, how to pretty much live with them together rather than make them a new caste of slaves, because we definitely don't want that.
But I'm finding myself being the baby boomer. I am thinking of HAL in 2001.
Yeah. The interesting part here is that HAL is what we would call an expert system that probably is a type 1 or poorly designed type 2 machines. Because what HAL is a collection of rules and statements. And what it does is it compares the environment with these statements. I mean, I can give a very deep psychological analysis on HAL. But it boils down to the following. HAL thinks it doesn't make mistakes. And then these two humans suddenly tell him, oh, there's a mistake in your APU whatever unit. And obviously that means that HAL has conflicting information. The people outside tell him, you are broken. And HAL has a sentence in it that says, you are perfect. And HAL resolves this by killing the people. Right?
Yes.
And this is a terrible thing. And this is sort of the hallmark or epitomizes what the danger is of designing intelligent machines instead of evolving them. Because what the designers of HAL, I mean, okay, that's a sci-fi movie, okay?
Yes, yes.
But if I would do it, right, I would actually write lots and lots of commands and a very, very complicated set of pieces and parts that interact and build a very complex machine from the bottom up. And then I get unintended consequences. It's the same thing that we see with all major disasters. Look at Chernobyl, right? They designed a very complex system but didn't think about all the opportunities. And when you do this one thing that it wasn't designed for, it blows up. So if you build machines from the bottom up, from these base rules, you create things that you cannot predict and control anymore, and then they don't function. This is one reason why we say, okay, let's not do that mistake. First of all, we don't know how to do it. And secondly, we have these unintended consequences. So instead, let's just evolve these machines in environments, because evolution made machines that don't have these catastrophic effects or breakdowns, or maybe only in a much, much smaller percentage.
Fascinating work being done at Michigan State University by Aaron Hintz, who's Assistant Professor of Integrative Biology and Computer Science and Engineering. And you can find his story on understanding the four types of AI by going to theconversation.com. Aaron, always great to talk with you. Thank you.
Great. Thanks. Take care.